Pastor Joe.
And I'm Kirsten.
We've served in church leadership for over two decades.
And most of that, we've been on staff together.
We're here to talk about our faith, family, and ministry.
Welcome to Under the Hood.
It's being billed as the most boring Super Bowl with the worst halftime show in the history of Super Bowls.
It was a boring game.
Well, the Chiefs weren't in it, so it's...
I was going to say we should start with, how about those Chiefs?
How about those Chiefs?
Oh, yeah, they weren't even around.
Did you like my little opening bit for my sermon this weekend?
Yeah.
Were you proud of me? Were you impressed?
Brock just kind of hung his head. Joe dressed in my veil, which, by the way, he had a little fun fact wrong.
I did?
I'd ordered that veil a year or two before, maybe even 3 years before the queen died, because I knew she was nearing that age. And I was like, well, you know, you're supposed to go into mourning when the queen dies and you're supposed to wear black. That is a very, like, they abide by that there. So I was like, I'll order this veil. And I do think we've talked about it before on this podcast, because there is a picture posted of me out there on our show notes.
We should do a side-by-side.
And on our Instagram.
When we both wore the veil for different reasons.
Who wore it best?
Who wore it best? She's going to win that one, I promise.
That's amazing.
No, I only mentioned the veil during one of the services.
Oh, really?
I don't, because whatever service you were in, I saw you sitting out there and I just made that comment off the cuff.
Funny. Okay. Well, did you do it on Saturday night as well?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, then 10 a.m. crowd got the extra. You're not supposed to do that. Now they're going to go, I should go to 10 a.m. more. Okay. So he wore a black veil to be in mourning and then handed out sour grapes candy. For his sour grapes that the Chiefs were not in the Super Bowl this year.
There could be some people listening that have no clue what you're referring to. And I would just say, for the last 5 or 6 years, the Chiefs have been in the Super Bowl like regularly. And so I come out and I dance and I put on my Patrick Mahomes wig and I run. I don't dance. I run around.
I was going to say.
Nah, I don't really dance. Last year.
He moves.
Last year.
If he calls that a dance, he moves.
Last year, I came out to the Chiefs rock anthem and I was doing the tomahawk chop.
It was a little much for church.
I thought highlight reels and the tomahawk. Do you think that was a little much anyway?
It's a little much. We're here to worship the Lord and you were up there dancing with yellow and green, yellow and red lights. And
I threw out
Chiefs. Logo on the screen.
This is true. But we have a lot of Chiefs fans. And we were in the Super Bowl. It's a big deal. So I threw out Nick Bolton barbecue chips.
Okay.
And I've thrown out popcorn in the past.
Yeah.
And Travis Kelce Crunch and Mahomes Crunch. It's been a lot of fun.
This year.
Because they're not in the Super Bowl. And a lot of people ask me. I wasn't going to do anything. But then
people,
I thought.
But people rely on getting a handout.
That is not true.
On Super Bowl.
But
no,
there's
that's
expectations.
Not what I mean.
So
I know. It's fun. You make it fun. And they were hoping to still have some fun, even though your Chiefs aren't in it.
So I came out and I wasn't wearing a Mahomes wig or a jersey. And I just said,
what might be more fun is if you start adopting you're a fan of someone who's in the Super Bowl and play it that way. Like, play it like you choose between the Patriots and the Seahawks, and then you throw out like something from the side you're cheering for. So then every year there's something fun about it. You know, you don't have to do it at all. I've seen other churches just make it like, hey, Jersey weekend, it's Super Bowl weekend.
We could just make the whole service about Jesus.
Hey, there you go.
That's an idea.
Back on track.
Should I highlight the most important person in the room? Jesus. No, but it was fun. I threw on that veil and Kirsten, I was going to play sad music in the background, but I thought, that's one step
Hello,
too far.
Darkness, my
but
old
then,
friend.
But then I was like, let's throw out sour grapes. And that's as this idea kind of came to me, I thought, I'll put a veil on my head and I'll throw out sour grapes, but I don't think you can go to the store and just buy sour grapes. And I got on Amazon and I actually found candy that came in little rolls, little packs that look like Life Savers.
Mm-hmm.
and they said sour grapes right across. And but I didn't think people could see it, so Chris was able to blew it up on the big screen so people could see, and it was fun.
Yeah, but the Super Bowl was pretty boring. It wasn't a great game. There were playoff games that were better than that.
Way better.
And we had some food at our house that was more exciting than the game.
The food was exciting. We brought back an old favorite.
And then there was all this hoopla around the halftime show. And I'll be honest, some of you might not like me for saying this, but I thought they were both boring.
You mean the alternative? Shows.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I didn't think that Bad Bunny, and I've never heard of him before this.
Never heard of him.
Didn't think it was bad. I just didn't understand it. It wasn't in the language I speak, so I couldn't understand it. But
well, some of the dancing around him was very suggestive.
But everybody had clothes on, so there's a win. I know that song's bad.
I
don't know.
I have no idea what he was singing about. Never heard any of those songs before.
Then we watched that, and then we finished the game, and then we watched the Turning Point, I think is what it's called, on TBN. And I was like, Kid Rock on TBN?
That's the Trinity Broadcasting Network.
I apparently missed the memo that Kid Rock became a Christian.
Me too. I had no idea. So he comes out and he does that I'm Kid Rock, which was this song that he was made
why
famous.
Why don't you sing it for us?
My voice isn't there. Otherwise I would, but my voice was I'm Kid Rock. So I'm losing my voice again. And then I'm like, what was the, I mean, I couldn't understand any words he was saying. But then at the end, they announced some guy I've never heard of before that looked like Kid Rock. And I got a little closer look. I'm like, wait a minute. That's Kid Rock singing this song, but it's not Kid Rock.
Yeah, I didn't know his real name.
We looked him up his real name because obviously his parents didn't name him Kid Rock, but we looked up his real name. I'm like, he's singing under his real name, and this is actually a pretty good song. And Brock sitting next to me, my son, because he had come home from the young adult Super Bowl party to catch the rest of the game, and we were watching that after the game. So we and he was kind of singing along. I said, "You know this song?" He goes, "Yeah." And
of
then,
of course, he does. Brock likes all music.
And then, right in the middle of it, and I don't remember the words, but Kid Rock or whatever his real name is, started like preaching a little bit, like in the rhythm of the song,
sharing his of faith.
And, yeah, and I'm like going, "Wait a minute!" We had some friends over, and I'm like. And then they started showing clips when he was on the Joe Rogan show talking about his faith. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. I said, is Kid Rock a Christian?
Because he was like talking Joe Rogan about why he should.
And one of our friends that was with us at our Super Bowl party said, yeah, I mean, Kid Rock was the one, his understanding was the one that got Joe Rogan kind of thinking about Christianity in a real way. And I'm like, wait a minute, where have I been? First, Jelly Roll, we talked about him last week.
I know, it's like all kinds of...
And I said, you're telling me Kid Rock's a Christian now? I had no idea.
Robert James Ritchie.
So they announced him as a singer. I'm like, who's Robert James Ritchie?
Never heard of him before.
But it was a good song. And then he started preaching the gospel, and I don't remember what he said, but it was... I think it was solid, and I didn't analyze it, but I'm going, wait a minute, what's going on here?
I was indifferent with both halftime shows, and I appreciate, you know, Turning Point trying to do something more wholesome, but I'll be honest, I just didn't think that Bad Bunny was, maybe I'm skewed, but I just didn't think it was that bad. Like, they had said, oh, it's going to be horrible, and I thought, I've seen some bad ones. I mean, you and I were... watching the Super Bowl back in 2003 or 2004 when Janet Jackson,
that felt like a turning point when it went from, hey, I'm looking forward to the halftime show to it just got worse and worse and worse and worse. I feel like it hasn't recovered since then.
Again, I don't know anything about Bad Bunny, but there were dancers, there were celebrities in that show, and he's from South America.
Puerto Rico.
Okay, but what I don't understand
is how little we know about
it. Is why people, but isn't Puerto Rico part of South America?
No, it's part of the USA. No. All right, we need to go back to eighth grade.
No, you're right. But this is the point that I'm trying to make is that the people were like, why couldn't we get an American to do, like on the threads and stuff, why couldn't we get an American to do the halftime show? And I'm like, he is American. But South, I was thinking South America, like Americans. But
I'm pretty
Puerto
sure
Rican,
it's, I'm pretty sure Puerto it's Puerto Ricans, Rico.
They vote in our elections, don't yeah. they?
I'm pretty sure he has an American citizenship.
Yeah. So I was sitting there going, I'm so confused why everybody's so confused by this. But yes, he does not speak English and he prides himself on that. And that's weird to me, but that's fine. I mean, he's if he's from Puerto Rico, I don't think the main language is English. So
I may be missing the point here, but the Super Bowl is one of the most American things in the world.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many millions and millions of people. And I know we're a nation of immigrants. I know that. But at the same time, if your entire halftime show is not even in English and most of your audience is not catching any of it. So I was like, I was not a fan. I don't know anything about this guy. We watched both halftime shows to compare. Neither one of the halftime shows got me excited about anything.
I wasn't going to be persuaded by culture of being anti. I wasn't anti. I just was like indifferent.
Well, none of it but got most, me jazzed.
But most Super Bowl halftime shows, although, wasn't it last year, Dolly Parton?
No. Dolly, that was not Super Bowl.
When did she dress up as a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader?
What game
and
was that?
Sing? I thought it was halftime last
was that,
year.
Was that a Thanksgiving game when Dallas played Thanksgiving? They always do a kind of a halftime show. Didn't Dolly come out?
See, whatever show it was, I remember that one. Thanks, Dolly. Because I was sitting there going, isn't she like 85 years old and she's in a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader outfit? I was impressed. I was like, okay.
Okay, here we have it. She dressed as a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader during the halftime show of the Thanksgiving Day NFL game in 2023.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
How 77 was it? Years old.
77. Sorry, Dolly, not 85. I remember that one, but obviously it wasn't a halftime show.
Can I just state something that should be obvious to the world? Dolly Parton dressed up as a cheerleader, Dallas Cowboys cheerleader at age 77. Looks a lot better than me on any day of my life dressing up as a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader.
Well, I think everyone would agree with that. I don't think we need to see that, even mentally. No, but thank you.
I'm here to paint the picture for you.
No, I think that most halftime shows are just blah. And so I didn't really pay attention to the hoopla about why Bad Bunny was going to be controversial. Apparently he rides the line on gender. He didn't seem to be genderless to me. At the halftime show.
Well, that was
show.
The thing. Everybody's like, he's going to come out in a dress because I think he does perform.
He was in a suit, a white suit.
We're like sounding like color. A couple of old people talking about culture.
I know, but kids culture. Notice I'm using his pronouns. He did not seem genderless to me in the halftime show. And there really weren't a whole lot of things he did.
I think what you're trying to say is all the hype, boycotts, protest, everything leading up to it, what everybody was saying, what you're saying is, I'm not sure I saw all that.
Correct.
At the Super Bowl.
Correct.
I don't think that all the fear.
Again, I didn't understand a word he said.
Correct. I think what you're saying is, I don't think all the fear and concern. I think that was a higher level than what actually got. But then again,
it's typical for our culture, though.
But you remember,
like
you
they all announce a name, everybody freaks out, and then.
But you got to remember, this guy's very outspoken about a lot of things that people would say is un-American and far-leaning progressive, and you know. And so there's the.
I'm not saying I support him.
Don't underscore the political aspect here. He drew political lines and people. You know how this world is.
Everything is.
If you don't agree with me, I hate you.
Everything's
that's
political now.
But I was going to say this: the most memorable thing about the halftime show for me was, for a good part of that show, he carried a football. I don't know. That made sense. It's the Super Bowl, and the Patriots. In the first half were so bad. Somebody posted right after the halftime show, they said something like, did anyone notice that Bad Bunny had more yards than the Patriots? the first half.
That's funny.
Like, he carried the ball for more yards than the entire. And I thought, now that's funny. I'm going to remember that.
And did you know that those bushes, all the greenery,
they were people.
They were people.
That's how they got them out there so fast.
I saw a video of a guy who got to be one of the bushes, the trees, the greenery, and they had to sign extreme NDAs in order to do it. He said about 50 to 100 people got fired for breaking their NDA and suffered probably consequences. But yeah, he said you had to have some kind of like marching band kind of experience in your past. You had to be semi-athletic and you had to be between 5'6" and 6' tall in order to do it. Because yeah, instead of them having to bring all those props out, you were the prop and
you just wore the
out
costume
there and stand in position. And so there's a couple pictures, if you see them online, of people kind of looking through their greenery to see what was going on out there.
See, but I didn't know that in the moment, and I was wondering how they got.
I could see their arms. You could see some of them moving, and
well,
I
didn't
like,
know how they got them out there so fast.
Those are people dressed up as bushes, and that was crazy.
Would you have ever to be a part of a NFL halftime show? Would you have dressed up as a bush and run out there? Would you have signed up to do that?
I don't meet the height requirements, but yes, I would have, because if you don't know this, I was the mascot in high school. I have no problem dressing up as something and running around on a field or basketball court or whatever.
That's hilarious.
You're laughing.
No, I think we should AI you into a halftime bush show. And
I have pictures of me dressed up as an eagle in high school.
We've posted them here.
Yeah.
Well, shifting gears real quick. That wasn't the only big event this weekend. In our household,
right.
We not only was
keep the party rolling.
Not only did we do the Super Bowl party, but 2 days before that, Kirsten hosted a opening ceremonies.
What's it
party
mean
for the Olympics?
Every other year, biannually or semi-annually.
Are you talking about the Winter Olympics?
Every 2 years.
Yeah, I think biannually.
Biannual Olympic opening ceremonies party, because now they're every 2 years, and I've been doing this for a while. And so, yeah, it was fun. We had a good time. The opening ceremonies is a little boring.
I'm telling you, the Super Bowl was the most boring Super Bowl on earth. And the opening ceremonies for the Winter Olympics was more boring than that. I mean, it was dreadfully boring.
I like it when the USA walks out and we cheer for them and our team. But leading up to it, it was a little slow. I think it was overall, it's still fun. We had Italian food. We had chicken fettuccine and chicken parmesan and frutta fresca.
The food theme at every party is at every Olympics every 2 years is based off the host country's food palette. So it was Italy. So it was Italian food.
Guess what is in 2 years?
I have no idea.
LA, Los Angeles, United States of America. We're having cheeseburgers. Already playing the menu.
I thought you were going to say we're having food truck food.
That's what I
think of LA.
Food trucks.
Miles of food trucks.
No, because it's not just LA. I do it for the whole country. And what is America kind of known for? Mm-hmm. Cheeseburgers.
Hey, well, I'm down.
I want to go to America and have a cheeseburger. I don't know why. Maybe hot dogs. We should do hot dogs and cheeseburgers. But yeah, so that's what we're doing.
All right. So we will report in 2 years from now on cheeseburger opening ceremonies kickoff.
I'm actually hoping to be at the opening ceremonies.
Well, who are you going with?
Well, probably not you, because you're a fuddy-duddy.
No
way.
Does
anybody out there want to go with me? Did you know some of the games are being played in Oklahoma City?
Oh, no, I didn't.
So what you need to do, if you're interested in tickets, is go sign up online for the lottery, and then you can get chosen to pay $400 to go to a game.
I can pretty much guarantee you I will have nothing to do with that. Made a big announcement Saturday night.
I know. Can I say that when we have an online service, we also have an online crowd. So when you say in service, hey, stick around afterwards.
You got a big announcement.
I got something to say. People are on their keyboards. What's he going to say? Why don't we get to hear it?
And then the online stream cuts off because the service ends.
And they're like, ah!
No, I had an announcement to make that would have taken way too much time in church. So we had a little quick gathering after church, and I made the announcements that we are after Easter. So we still have a couple months away.
So April 9th.
Yeah, April 9th after Easter, the first Thursday after Easter, we are actually moving our Saturday night service to Thursday nights.
That's right.
And that's a big announcement. I mean, that is, and I'm not going to,
huge.
I'm not going to sit here and act like that's not a pretty good size shift.
Because it is a shift.
We've been doing Saturday nights for almost 8 years.
Successfully.
Very successfully.
Yeah.
You know, and here's what I tried to explain Saturday evening to everybody is that we'd been thinking about the future of the Saturday night service and how it fits in our rhythms moving forward. And we've been thinking and talking about this for about a year. Mm-hmm. And there were a number of churches that I'm familiar with that have made the jump to Thursday night services with quite a bit of success. And we began looking at it and, you know, I've shared, you know, I'm in a series right now about our vision, mission, values, and really aligning our ministry around those mission, vision, values. And I'm right in the middle of that right now. And I would say a number of months ago, we began to put this to prayer, you know, mm-hmm. about Lord, what would you know, is there something we should do here differently? And what would be the benefits of trying something brand new? Because we have never been a risk adverse church. I mean, I told everybody Saturday night, we started the Saturday night 8 years ago, and that was a big step of faith for us. There was a risk with that. And the Lord blessed it, and it's been great. And we finally decided that, you know what, let's take a step of faith and see what happens. And really, you know, one of the main motivators for that was our mission. Let me back up. Our vision is a hope and a future for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, when we ask the question, where are we going? We want a hope and future for everyone because God cares more about where you're going than where you've been. And so when we ask the question, well, how are we going to get there? How are we going to do that? What do? Well, we make disciples who gather, grow, go. And a couple sermons ago, I really spent a long time unpacking gather, grow, go, and how important. We want that for everybody. Gathering, we want them to come to church. And so we were looking at the landscape of our church. And, you know, we have a situation here, and I think it's no different than a lot of churches, where a lot of times people, and a lot of times our younger folks in our church, they make a decision. All right, do we take the kids? Do we load them up and go see grandma and grandpa this weekend, wherever they are? We want to do this and do that or whatnot. And there's a choice they got to make in that moment. You know, do we go do that or do we skip church? Do we skip the gathering? And really, we've really been pumping the gathering. We feel like it's such an important part of the discipleship process. And we're seeing that a lot. So there's some inconsistency happening, choices. And we began to think, what if we had a midweek service? What if we had and when I say midweek, I don't mean like Wednesday, like a little bit earlier in the week to catch the work week. What if our first service of the week was actually like on Thursday? And then it kind of removes a roadblock.
There's other churches doing this too.
A lot of churches doing this, mm-hmm. and it's kind of a thing that's happening. And we're like, you know, I think that would work here. And so we're like, you know what? We feel like the consistency. So if somebody, if a family wanted to go see grandma and grandpa or go camping as a mm-hmm. family or whatever, they wouldn't have to choose anymore. It's like, we're going to go Thursday. Thursday would be exactly identical to every other service. Just like Saturday is identical mm-hmm. to every service that we have. It would just be on Thursday. And the more we thought about that, the more we prayed on that, it just seemed like a lot of peace was coming around that idea. And there was some ministry alignment things that were coming around that was like, this could be really good. And then there was we had to figure out if we were to do something like that seriously, you know, Celebrate Recovery meets on Thursday nights, and that's been extremely successful.
Very.
So we began to visit with, you know, our director of CR, and that idea of maybe making a change on Thursday night was met with great welcome. And we're like, really? And there were some things stirring there, like, well, what if we did this and that? And then there became alignment with the leaders of CR of like, what if we did that on Tuesday, and all the benefits of moving CR up 2 days in the week and making some of these shifts, and it all just kind of was coming together. And yeah. Like, and there were other things as well. And we just were praying. It was like, you know what? It's time. Let's try this. And mm-hmm. and so we've been behind the scenes preparing, like, what would that look like and how do you kind of reshape your week and how that goes. And we decided to take a step of faith and do it. And all of that, I made the announcement, Saturday, and then the church got an email this week, the rest of the church. And so, it changes hard. You know, you guys would admit change is hard, right?
I like change.
I do too. Change is hard for a lot of people.
Yeah. Don't like change, especially. Yeah. And I can understand that. There's probably things in my life that are change that I don't like that I probably haven't identified.
Yeah. Change is hard. And when you put that in the church world, you know, a lot of times churches have a reputation as being resist change. And we see that scattered across the landscape of our nation, don't we? We have churches that resisted change so much that they ended up just dying off.
Well, and I think that's what's unique about New Life is we haven't been worried about change, scared of change, I should say. And change has been healthy for us. There's things that have come to an end. There's things we've started. There's things we've shifted. And those have been, you know, for the most part, pretty successful. And that's helped allow other people to either find a home church, come to know Jesus, you know, all those things that, you know, have created a healthy church here in Northwest Arkansas.
That's right. So, and there's one other aspect of this as well that we've been praying through and thinking through quite a bit is, and I talked about this Saturday night, and I put this in the letter, the email as well, that, you know, there is something stirring among young adults. We've talked about it on this podcast here just a little bit. There's something stirring in our church with young adult ministry. There's some leaders that have arisen that have been rallying some things. And we've done two events already for young adults, one in January and then one just past weekend at a Super Bowl party. There's another one coming up in March. And we're really praying and asking God, bring some momentum to this area of our church. Because by and large, that, you know, 18 years of age up to around 30, mm-hmm. that it's kind of been a barren wasteland of ministry for us. There has not been a lot happening, but we have people in that demographic, and I think there's a lot of people to reach in that demographic. And I look at the way our church family is, I'm going, there is no reason why we can't reach this group. And our elders have been praying about this. We've been having, even up in our elders' meetings, they've identified, man, this is an area that we really need to be working on. When there's so much agreement, and now I see this momentum going, and it's like, what if, here's the what if behind this, after Easter, we want to see weekly gatherings with our young adults. What if Thursday nights could become that gathering point? What do you think, Kirsten? You know, we've talked about this quite a bit. Thursday nights would be awesome. I'm not saying we gear the service for them on Thursday nights, but what if their gatherings and their programming and the things that we're doing with that ministry started Thursday after service? I mean, that would be, and that became their thing. I think the potential is there. And so we thought, could Thursday nights be a young adults night? I'm not saying the service is for young. I'm saying that's where they identify, and then that's where their fellowship and the context of their ministry and stuff like that.
Maybe the service is that, but I think the idea of having something for our students who graduate high school have somewhere, some community, and that has been missing. Like you said, we haven't had anything for them. They graduate from high school, and then, like you said, they've kind of been lost in a way of, I don't really fit with the adult life groups, and I can't be part of youth group anymore. So where do I fit in? So this is going to be
where are my people?
Yeah. And out of all the groups of people, all the ages, all the different stages in life, this is a group that needs community with other believers, other friends of their age. And so this is going to be a really, really great thing for them. And, you know, we have two boys that fit that category, and, I don't think are going to be able to take advantage of that ministry. Although Brock has been part of the beginning stages of this one since he's a second semester senior, we've tried to encourage them, go ahead and get in this community now before you graduate, so that you, if you don't go somewhere, if you don't leave Northwest Arkansas, you have this community already established.
Here's one thing about that young adults. You nailed it. They're looking for fellowship, community. They're looking for their people. Mm-hmm. And I think that we can be a church that provides that.
And when, you know, you and I did college age ministry.
We've done college age twice, two different churches.
Back in the day.
Back in our day.
But it was something, we were that age category when we did it. And those people, they didn't care what they did together as long as they were together.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
They did not care what they did. Sometimes it was literally just sit in our living room and they were happy with that.
That's
and
right.
Sometimes it was in-depth Bible studies.
Yeah.
And they were all about it. And so don't brush them off. They're a strong in their faith. They're strong in community with one another. And they're, I mean, that's the next generation.
Right. Here's what I told Saturday night as I met with all the Saturday night service people. Several hundred people were there, and I was able to speak to all of them at the same time. And I told them this: I don't know exactly what God's going to do with this young adults focus. And I don't know if Thursday nights becomes a thing. I don't know if they gravitate towards that. The service itself, we're just moving Saturday night to Thursday nights.
Same identical as the weekend.
Same identical services for
it's
everybody.
The first weekend service.
That's right. I want to make it super clear. We're not creating a young adult service. That's not what we're doing. We're moving Saturdays to Thursdays. But this idea, there could be some identity on Thursday nights, a rallying point for all these young adults. And some of them go to work or they work from home. It's like, yeah, Thursday nights are our thing. And then the programming itself, one thing that you and I've said many times is when you're dealing with young adults, that college age and beyond, whatever, they don't care if it starts at 7, 8, 9, 10. We used to joke, we don't even get started with young adult ministries till late at night when most people are going to bed. They're not bound by the clock is what I'm saying.
I could not do college age ministry anymore because I'm in bed at the time the doorbell was ringing back in the day.
I know.
They would ring the doorbell at 10 p.m. and we're like, hey, come on in.
Yeah, we're meeting at my house at 9:30 and there's no end date, you know.
Dude, if the doorbell rang at 10 p.m. now, I'd be like, I'd be checking the Ring cam. Who is at my door?
But there was a time when before we had children, we were in our 20s and we were leading all these young adult ministries. It was like, yep, come on over. And I can't even tell you how many.
And some of those were young married. One of the couples had just had a baby. It fits that 18 to 30 category. But we specifically did college age, but it moved into some young adult stuff. And that's kind of what our target age here is for that Thursday night after service. But you're going to see them at the Thursday night service. They might be serving. They might be on stage. Hopefully they're going to jump in and get involved because there's going to be something for them afterwards. And it's going to be a really neat thing to watch that kind of all come together. And
I do too. It's kind of fun to think, you know, it's not all figured out. And sometimes with young adult ministry, parts of it are very fluid. It's very much, contextual in the moment. But I don't know. We've just been praying and asking God to do something there. And we've thought that'd be cool. If we move to Thursday nights, and we could bring the consistency up and give people more choices. They don't have to choose one or the other because the gathering is that important. Mm-hmm. And we want to create every opportunity for people to gather. That's part of the discipleship path.
Gather.
Where we're worshiping in God's word, remembering Christ's sacrifice through communion, be encouraged by the church. But what if it could also be maybe a point of connection for young adults? I think it could happen.
So the first service of the weekend will be Thursdays, and then, of course, Sundays. So be praying about that. Yeah,
Thursdays at 6:30. So that'll be a little bit different than Saturday night. Saturday night's at 5.
Yeah.
But Thursday nights will be at 6:30. So you have a little more time.
Typically, people work till 5 or 5:30.
A little bit more time.
And so we're hoping to have, we're considering, this is under the hood, we're considering getting some food trucks here. So we're going to try that.
You're throwing that out there over the airways, are you?
Because we're going to try and work at least to have a food truck here. So if you want to stop, grab some food from the food truck, eat, come to church.
The church will be open. People have time to fellowship.
I mean, we can't guarantee it because we don't own a food truck.
But
hey, all you listeners, have you been considering?
If you know of someone who has a food truck, let us know, because we'd love to have, you know, different food trucks here on Thursday nights. And because it is a quick turnaround. I mean, we're all parents. We know we got school, we got after school activities, and we want to try and make to church. And so are we going to go home and bake some chicken and then come, or grab a taco or a piece of pizza from a food truck here would be ideal, and then get to worship. It's going to be a really, I think it'll be a nice evening. We're looking forward to it.
I want people to know that, you know, change is hard. I want to come back to that. Change is hard. And I know that for some people in our church, there's a very specific reason for why they choose Saturday nights. And some of that may be scheduling. That may be other things, just, you know, where they're at in life. And so I'm just going to say in advance that I know for some of you, this is a big disruption, and I empathize with that. And this change is hard. And I hope over the next couple months, as we've seen in other parts of our church, the Lord opening doors and bringing alignment, and I pray that that would be the case in your family as well, that over the next couple months, that you'll clearly see that, you know, which path, you know, will you come the Thursday nights with us and make that shift, or maybe shift to transition to Sunday morning, whatever that is. But I just acknowledge, I've been doing ministry for almost 3 decades. And we've gone through all kinds of transitions, and I know that this is a big one. And so maybe I'll just speak to you for just a second. If you're listening to this going, oh, I'm not looking forward to this change or whatever, I get it. I totally get it. And I just thank you for your grace. That's how I opened the meeting Saturday night. I just said, hey, you know, I just preached a sermon on a little bit of grace, you know, grace and truth. And I guess I'm asking you guys for a little bit of grace as I share what I'm going to share with you, because I know it's going to need some time to just incubate and just sit, because we've got some folks that have been coming to that Saturday night service for years.
Well, since it began, yeah.
That's right. And so, listen, you're on my heart. I'm praying for you. I know this is a change. I'm not lost in how this is difficult for some, but I think over time, if we could have this, this spirit about us, like, you know what, let's see what the Lord is doing here. It's okay to take steps of faith. Let's see what happens. I appeal to some of the folks that started coming on Saturday night because we had a Saturday night service and how that's changed their life. What if your experience could be also someone else's experience, but it means it's on Thursday. Like, I think about the people that we're going to reach. I'm thinking about the consistency that we're going to see in our church family. So I appeal to you, if this is something that's like, oh, I can't believe we're losing Saturday night, I would just ask for a little bit of grace and pray with us. Let's see what God is doing. I'll tell you, right around the corner could be a harvest that none of us even realized until we took a step of faith and trusted God in this, and who would want to miss out on that? So anyway, more to come. We'll talk more about it. I'm excited about it, praying about it. Excited to take this step of faith after Easter. Kirsten, I've noticed that you're back doing sourdough bread again.
I got the sourdough starter out of the refrigerator, and I'm back.
After months of it being dormant.
Yeah. You just put it in the refrigerator for a while. I had someone ask for some starter last week, so I got it out, started feeding it, shared some starter with her, and decided, well, I already have it out, so I might as well make some sourdough. So I made a couple loaves.
And the loaves have been flowing out of our kitchen lately. Oh.
So I was up this morning. Joe said,
yeah,
something about me sleeping. I said, well, it's because I was up this morning at 3 a.m. making sourdough. And he's like, what?
I said, first words out of her mouth. I said, good morning. I was up at 3 baking sourdough. I'm like, what?
Well, I'd woken up like at 2:40. I looked at the clock, and then it hit me. Oh, yeah, I have dough rising. And I knew in the middle of the night, if I didn't, you know, prepare the loaves, it would have been overproofed. And so I was like, okay, I should probably go make those sourdough loaves real quick. And so, you know, it's a process. There's like 3 segments to sourdough: your starter and feeding your starter, and then making the dough and letting it rise. And then the third is making the loaves and getting those ready and baking them. And so to keep that process going, depending on how much space you have in your kitchen, how much baking space you have, you know, it's one of those things. I really only have about 2 or 3, maybe 4 Dutch ovens to cook but I really can't only fit one in the oven at a time. So I typically only do about two at a time, but I keep them going.
Your sourdough description just reminded me of our definition of what a disciple is. I know this is a little bit of a stretch.
Okay, let's hear it.
You know, a disciple is somebody who is following Jesus, being changed by Jesus, and committed to the mission of Jesus.
Yeah.
It's about transformation.
And that's what I'm doing with sourdough.
You have the starter. That's like the starter is like, that's how you choose to follow Jesus.
And you got
to
feed it.
And then you feed it and it goes through this transformation process and the dough rises and it becomes
the starter rises.
And it transforms the more you feed it. And then it becomes what God has planned for you always to begin or to become. It's this beautiful loaf of sourdough bread. So I think it's kind of like your discipleship journey.
And did you know the holier the sourdough, the better it is? So
That is true.
Oh, there we go.
Hey, we should write
a devotional. Now I don't know if any of that makes sense to anybody.
Starter in the devotional.
So the starter is this very small thing, and then by the time it grows, it's in this huge bowl that we have, and we have a place in our house where it rises. The temperature is really good for rising.
I have a proofing box. I should teach you how to make sourdough so that you could write the devotional better.
We should write a devotional of how our walk with Jesus is like the sourdough baking process. I think it's a bestseller in the making.
I'm sure.
The cover of it can be Let It Rise.
Our four listeners will maybe think about purchasing it.
No, I mean,
with a 50% discount code.
The front cover can be the three phases of transformation. You have the sourdough jar, the big bowl of transformation, and the final product. And it's like,
amazing.
Let It Rise. That's the devotion. Let It Rise.
And then
we will write it so that it starts at 3 a.m. Because that's what
it doesn't have to. Like yesterday I got home from work and I had sourdough starter that was ready to make dough. And you have to you want to make your dough when your starter is at its peak. And my starter was at its peak. I was like, I should probably go ahead and make this dough. It was 6 or 6:30 p.m., which is not ideal to be making dough because then it's got to rise. And so hence the 2:40 a.m., I was like, I should probably get out of bed and make some, my sourdough so it doesn't, you have to think through all this and timeline stuff. So this afternoon, I should be able to bake two loaves, turn the dough that I have in the proofing box into two more loaves, and take the starter that I did and make more dough to start rising again.
You are describing a wonderful bread making practice and description. And I am sitting here thinking, this is a sermon illustration. These are two minds coming together to create,
beautiful, isn't it?
To not just create bread, but to create a theological discourse on discipleship.
I'm telling you, you may not be following
this through your iPhone or however you listen to this podcast. This may not be making any sense, but I actually see it clear as a bell. All right, friends, there's a sermon illustration soon to be coming.
That's all for today's show. We want to thank our amazing producer, Abby O'Brien. Be sure to check out our show notes and the links for things that we talked about today. And don't forget to subscribe. Thanks for joining us on
Under the Hood, not a car show.